Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'd like to begin today's episode by reminding everybody that the Payments Journal podcast can be found through various podcatchers such as iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Stitcher. Now, social distancing has moved more transactions online, and as a result, businesses have noticed an uptick in fraud. So fraudsters are taking advantage by really hiding in the crowd. Now, in order to reduce potential damage losses, businesses need to tighten fraud controls on their online platforms. So to help me with today's conversation, I have David Barnhart, who is the Chief Experience Officer at GIAC, and Raymond Pucci, who's the director of the Merchant Service Advisory Practice at Mercator Advisory Group. Now, given the global state of commerce, there's certainly a lot to unpack and digest in this episode. So without any further delay, let's start the show. So David and Ray, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about fraud as we kind of consistently are changing now of consumers' behaviors, kind of taking a look at, in-store commerce and e-commerce here. But before we get started today, I'd really like to kind of point out a few great bullet points that were provided to us by GIAC. So there's 14.1 million U.S. adult victims of identity fraud. There's 3.6 million adult victims of account takeover. There's $4 billion cost of account takeover, and this is in 2018, 3.2 million victims of new fraud account, and then there's a $13.4 billion cost of new account fraud from 2018, and that's up from $3 billion of the prior year. Now, David, let's start with you. Taking account all the statistics that I just provided there, what does that data reveal to you about the current state of fraud?
Well, the current state of fraud is continuing to go up. And unfortunately, I believe we're in a position where we're going to see numbers like we've never seen before. I believe we're going to see far higher than normal fraud attacks on many different vectors. You know, we have customers who are reporting to us that they're seeing as much as 15% uptick in the rate of fraud in really just the past 2 weeks. Social engineering is already happening on a large scale, playing on people's fears. This is the perfect storm for fraud operators to hide in what we would construe as unusually high online traffic volumes. You know, we're hearing a ton right now in the industry about business email compromises. If you think about it, the controllers who are, used to working in an office and having camaraderie and that dual control function are now working from home, something that they've normally never done. They've lost that office continuity, and that's something they rely on. You know, I see article after article coming out last week where, fraudulent payments as well as missing payments is to businesses, schools, state governments. That's a precursor that, the online fraud operators are certainly, refining their game. They're stepping up their attacks. And I fear once the smoke clears, we're going to see loss numbers like we've never seen them before.
Right, David. I would agree with that we're seeing a different, state of affairs right now in that from a business standpoint, the conditions that we have, businesses are scrambling to stay afloat. Their employees, for the most part, are working from home. So the normal business routines of risk management and varying policies and procedures with employees scattered, business guard is down and they're not as vigilant as they normally would be for fraud attempts. And on the demand side, I think that consumers are vulnerable because they're scared. They're more than likely either working from home or no longer have a job, and they're vulnerable to getting, email phishing attempts. They may be getting phone calls, and they may unwittingly be giving up account information that then would be used in a future fraud attempt, an account takeover, synthetic fraud. So, I think the stage is certainly set right now, and we're unfortunately going to be seeing some very negative results from a fraud standpoint.
Right. No, thank you. I think that that's certainly interesting, Ray. And I think you brought up a fantastic point there of kind of just not only the consumer side, but also the business side of it. I mean, just kind of taking a look at like small business in general. And David, I know you and I were talking before the podcast aired in terms of just, you know, there are certain companies that have already kind of had plans in place for employees that are working in home. And so it's just kind of refining those. But there are a lot of organizations that really don't have a plan in place and kind of had to like switch and create a plan as quickly as possible. But when you do things that quickly, sometimes security is not necessarily the first thing that's thought of in that end, and certainly can open up vulnerabilities for employees in terms of just security gaps and lapses. And as Ray pointed out, in terms of just possibly phishing attacks and unwittingly, allowing for account information to be leaked over just through emails or other things like that. But now kind of moving forward, as we take a look at, you know, everybody's talking about social distancing. David, I'd love to get from your side of things, you know, can you explain how social distancing is going to impact online fraud?
Well, you know, fraud operators are certainly going to take advantage of this. Online traffic is people's outlet. If you think about outreach and not being able to get out of their homes, especially if you live in a big city like New York, Los Angeles, you know, your online access, you know, your ability to not only shop, but communicate with others is really your only outlet. And, you know, the fraud operators and the people that commit fraud are going to prey upon this, unfortunately. And this really all begins with, you know, just your general consumer. And back to Ray's point, be careful of the emails that you are sent. Careful on clicking on links. Don't click links. And if you're going to go out and you're going to donate to charities, if you're going to purchase from a website, you know, necessary goods or services, do it through the trusted and verified websites. You know, it's the right now, someone asked me earlier last week about data breaches. And I said, well, data breaches are still going to continue. They're still going to take advantage of heavy traffic, lots of things going on with the online space, but they're also going to ramp up, you know, things like business email compromise, spear phishing, whether that's, you know, sending an email, a text message, placing a phone call. Phone calls, you know, people are a little bit more leery about answering numbers they don't know. But, you know, when you're basically attached to a device and that device is your outlet and your means of communicating with the outside world, you know, bad things can happen if people aren't very diligent in looking at where the email's coming from, what they're asking, or if they're going to a website, making sure that is the true website that is verified. But, you know, more and more enrollments are going to start taking place on these retailers' websites and different online providers. I've had several companies tell me that some of the volumes that are hitting their websites are far larger than they've ever been for a Black Friday or a Cyber Monday. And just think about that for a moment. I mean, this isn't the holiday buying season. These are people that are looking for goods and services so that they can live, so they can get by. And if, you know, now more than ever, you know, companies need to employ strong identity and payment verification processes. As they see this record traffic that comes in, obviously a lot of it's going to be good, but there is going to be some bad. And, you know, the fraud types that we're being told our customers are starting to see and their attempts being made are first party fraud, true name fraud, account takeover, as well as synthetic identities. You know, the big unknown right now isn't whether you're going to have fraud or you're going to get attacked. It's really the vector of fraud and what kind of fraud should you be ready to detect and deal with. You know, usually we have one or the other, right? We have something that's severe with synthetics. We've done a lot of podcasts, a lot of articles about synthetic identity and account takeover, true name fraud. But now we've got this, back to Ray's point, we've got people that aren't working. We got people that are, you know, potentially committing the fraud themselves. So, you know, you've got this new insertion of a different kind of fraud, which is, you know, something that's always there, but it may be more prevalent today. So companies are going to have to adjust their strategies and really start to focus on, you know, back to the life cycle, everything that a customer does, whether it's the enrollment, the payment, the re-identification, there's going to have to be great emphasis really in managing that customer life cycle, not only to keep the fraud operators out, but also to protect the good customers that are there.
Right, David. There's just a, as you put it, a perfect storm going on with a surge in online and really with social distancing, that means that that's really the main sales channel that retailers have. And let's take the grocery vertical, for example. In the last year or so, online grocery sales have really taken off because national and regional grocers built an infrastructure for taking online orders, warehouse productivity to pick orders, and then most and almost just as important, the last mile delivery infrastructure. So they've been really taking advantage of the online grocery sales. And now with social distancing and people staying at home, online grocery sales have taken off. So as a retailer with, you know, a fraud management plan in effect, of course, that's really your key channel, one of your key, for most retailers, that's really their only channel now, sales channel online. So they have to face whether to make more lenient their transaction authorization processes and therefore be more susceptible to fraud attacks or fraud attempts on sales transactions. So I would anticipate that we're going to see in these retailers that are depending almost exclusively on online sales, more fraud attempts, knowing that the retailers' fraud management programs will be more lenient, wanting to take in every possible sale. But beware, there are fraudsters out there knowing that, and they'll be extra diligent to try to get in and make those fraudulent transactions and purchases.
Yeah, and if I could, I'd like to kind of just point out, you know, obviously we saw from data and research that when EMV came to the United States, obviously we saw the data that fraud really kind of went, I don't want to say went away, but shifted from that in-store card present type of transaction to now this card not present transaction. And we saw the exponential growth really when it kind of came to fraud in that particular area. You know, and as both you and Dave, Ray, you and David had pointed out, in terms of just, okay, well, now the in-store channel realistically has somewhat vanished for a lot of these merchants here. So you'd have to assume that the fraud itself for e-commerce is just going to grow even more exponentially than it has when we had the EMV transition over there. But what I'd kind of like to also take a look at is that, so this pandemic, unfortunately, has been going on for right now. It's only been about 2 weeks here, but there's estimates that it could go on for much longer where people are staying at home and social distancing themselves. And I have to start to think and say, well, is this a catalyst to really see lasting consumer behavior trend changes in the fact where this might be more normal, where there is a lot lower percentage of people going in store and a lot higher percentage of people buying through e-commerce. So, David, I'd be curious to get from your standpoint, do you see this as that merchants really can't look at this and say, well, you know what, our fraud has increased, but we're going to take the hit for right now, knowing that eventually this is going to slow down and things will go back to normal in the sense that our split between in-store commerce and online commerce kind of, you know, levels back out to pre-pandemic states? Or do you see this kind of being as a consumer behavior trend in that, no, merchants need to do this now and remember that this could be the normal behavior for people going forward? So kind of button up your fraud on the e-commerce side now, because this is a lasting change. But curious to get your thoughts, David.
You know, consumer behavior is really going to drive that. And, you know, once we get to more and more states with lockdowns and shelter in place orders, you know, back to your comment about time, I mean, you know, some statistics are saying 11, 12 more weeks, maybe. You know, I don't think online is going to go away. It's going to get stronger, but it's also up to the consumer, even though they may give the all clear. Some people with underlying conditions, with families, you know, they may choose to say, you know what, we're not going to rush back out to the mall or, you know, an electronics store or whatever the case, just because they're open. Yeah, we're going to get out and get in the car. We may go to the park. we may start to open ourselves up to society more, but walking into a building and actually buying a good or service off the shelf, I think, you know, obviously some things you will continue to do, but you know, from a social acceptance, it's really up to those consumers who are willing to get in a car or take a, you know, subway or an Uber or Lyft, whatever the case, and actually go to somewhere and buy something and bring it home when we've made it easier, you know, now more than ever to get that delivered straight to your home. You know, it's going to take some time, I think, for people mentally to rebound. And I don't think the online traffic is going to go away anytime soon. And, you know, quite honestly, people may find that it is extremely easy to use online services, so they don't have to go out and, you know, carry large bulky items, especially if they don't have a car and they're using some means of public transportation. You know, they were already probably using that before, some, but maybe now it's became a way of life. So I think we're going to see a lot of way of life establishment, which in turn, you know, the retailers and the merchants that are doing these online transactions can't look at this and say, well, we're going to write off the fraud losses for anywhere from 4 to 6 months of this pandemic because things are going to get back to normal. I don't think they can look at it that way. They should be looking at how to protect themselves and their customers now and going forward. And I, you know, if I was running one of these companies, I would actually just say this is the new normal. Until we see differently, this is going to be the new normal from here on out. And we're going to continue to refine the process to do the best fraud detection we can, whether it's in the enrollment space, verifying the payments, the re-identifications or changes in existing profiles, and, you know, things that don't go away, such as compliance. And some companies still have to do OFAC checks and all these other things. So, you know, just because we're under these dire conditions, it doesn't mean that you can relax your fraud detection, because at the end of the day, the people that are going to be holding the losses are the retailers or the merchants themselves.
Exactly, David. You know, across, again, different retail categories, we were talking earlier about, I mentioned the grocery vertical, but it really, most or many vertical categories across the retail landscape, the big box stores, electronics, you know, multi-product stores, warehouse clubs, they've made it so easy for people to order online, really with the twofold fulfillment option, buy online, pick up in store, or BOPIS, B-O-P-I-S, as some people call it, or delivery. And, it's taken a while for people to, from a consumer standpoint, to get used to that, especially the delivery side. Sometimes consumers don't want to pay for the delivery if it's not, you know, part of the deal, part of the purchase transaction, or others find it, you know, much more convenient to go to the store and pick up, you know, their 65-inch TV screen and bring it home right away to put it, you know, to use. So, but I think now that there will be this awakening. There is this awakening among consumers that wow, this is really easy from my mobile phone. And we had been seen in recent times, and it may go up slightly, but 50% of all online transactions are done from a mobile device. So consumers see how easy that is to place an order, and then again have it delivered to their door or if they want it in a hurry, they go pick it up. As we've been saying, fraudsters are aware of that, especially with high-priced items that can be delivered or even picked up in a store with a lot of anonymity behind it. So that really is an easy avenue for fraudsters that, they're smart folks, they persevere, and they'll find a way, they'll find the opening. So we will see, in my opinion, a continued upswing in online purchase transactions. Another vertical to mention, not to be overlooked, is the restaurant sector, that a mobile order and pay for pickup or, again, for delivery. There are all the third-party delivery companies that work with restaurants, given no table service, so we're seeing a lot of that. And even though these are lower-priced transactions for quick-service restaurants, fast casual, and even family dining type restaurants, those are still fertile ground for fraudsters to move in. So many businesses across verticals, it'll be a double-edged sword. Online sales go up, but a more vulnerability to fraudsters.
Yeah, and I'll kind of just leave this before we move on here to one final kind of personal experience. So we recently had to get a new cable for one of our electronic devices. We actually drove to a large electronic merchant in the area, and they actually had closed their doors to people coming in. However, they did have employees that were outside or right within the doors there that said, hey, look, go ahead, order this online. And then just say you want to do a click and collect for here, and then we'll go into the store, get it, you show us the receipt, and then we'll give you the item for there. So I think it's interesting how you've even seen large merchants kind of already adapt to this new behavior trend, also for just the health security of their own employees. But beyond kind of that measure here, when we're taking a look at the fraud aspect of it, David, I'd love to see give us like a little bit of maybe a playbook or a strategy or something of what are the action items that merchants should do to protect themselves from fraud in this new state that we seem to be in.
Yeah, going back to your example, it's not only protecting themselves from fraud, but also exposure, right? How do you do commerce today? And we're seeing a really interesting mix, right? Ordered online, sit in your car, and when your order comes out, they throw it in the window and you're on your way. But, now more than ever, it goes back to the life cycle, right? Managing the customer life cycle, because you want to keep out the bads. You want to protect the goods. You don't want to falsely decline good people, right? That's the worst thing that can happen today. That's one of the number one things that we do to help the companies that we do business with is how do you prohibit false declines, allow that consumer to transact in confidence and knowing that you're dealing with who you think you're dealing with, knowing that the payment is verified to them and it's open valid and you're going to get paid as a merchant. It's really double-sided. It's protect yourself as a company and protect the customers that are doing legitimate business with you. We've thought about this, and when we built the Epic platform, we went and we thought about it a little differently. And our API allows for easy integration. We don't require any on-premise installations. Being a fully digital software as a service, it allows companies that are in need of verification solutions to quickly connect, to quickly start to transact. And, we've seen and had a lot of calls of companies that we've talked to in the past that really had it as a low priority, or they've done just enough to get by. Well, they may have had to open up a .com side of their business. That's something that's very real today. All the way from small restaurants, a local restaurant where I live sent out a note and said, was on Facebook saying, look, you can't come inside, but we're establishing an online order form. We're going to change our menus. You order, you drive up, you tell us what kind of car you're in. We have someone run it out, or we drop it off. You come up and pick it up. You know, they had never had an online presence. They'd never taken payments online. Companies, large companies that didn't have such a strong presence online, or they may have had a decent presence online, you know, now that they've had a flood come in of people trying to transact and do business with them, they're trying to strengthen themselves. And we're seeing a massive amount of catch up. But the good thing is, you know, we had some forethought here in the way we designed this. We don't have to send engineers out. It's all over the phone. It's just easy connection. And I think that's going to be the new trend going forward, is the resiliency, the speed, and the time that it takes to get up and running and using. I think a lot of people are going to have to reevaluate their playbooks, you know, in every industry. Because if you're a company that requires heavy face-to-face or heavy on-prem, you know, no one's getting on airplanes and no one's really traveling. And some companies are even saying non-employees of this business and even some non-essential employees can work from home, but the essentials have to be here. We're limiting who actually goes to work. But, you know, when you think about all of the conditions that are around us, the condition that remains consistent is the fighting of the fraud. Fraud is taking advantage of everybody at this point. And as, you know, suppliers of products and services that help people detect fraud, as well as the people that use them, we all need to work diligently to, again, help good people transact, reduce the number of false declines, and catch the fraud operators to try to stem the tide of the attack of the people that are taking advantage of this unfortunate situation.
Yes, and if I'm a merchant, if I'm a retailer under these, you know, circumstances right now, I'm going to be reviewing my fraud management policies and procedures, and I'm going to be alerting all employees, you know, having a company-wide awareness of the vulnerability right now. I'm going to be identifying fraud vectors and openings that may be evident weaknesses in the system. I'll also be looking at metrics, keeping in mind, you know, a trend. You know, certainly 1 week or 1 month, numbers can be very volatile, as they will be right now. But looking at a trend of false declines, your chargeback rate, checkout abandonment on online sales, those are things that really have a direct impact on your business. So overall, understand what your risk tolerances are and work with your fraud management partners who have the, you know, necessary tools and solutions to be able to handle your particular situation. And in time, this will level out, but there will be a lot of pain right now, and it's important to address it right here at the moment.
Perfect. Now, Ray, I'm glad that you brought up their partners there. And David, you brought up the Epic platform. So obviously, I think that dovetails nicely into, you know, from your end, David, you know, how is GIACT working to provide merchants with the tools necessary to combat fraud on their online platforms?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, it starts with the connection, and the API being a software as a service allows for full integration really within a couple of days or weeks, depending on the end user's capabilities. The platform was really designed to be one size fits all, so it can fit into a large corporate or even the smallest of small businesses. And it allows companies to manage that customer lifecycle, you know, enrollments, payments, identity, re-identification, and compliance. The solution was designed to take away all the silos that plague a lot of companies and allows for a holistic approach to managing the customer and really all of the customer's requests. So onboarding, you know, brand new customer, setting up a payment account for disbursements or a payment account for web debits or debits, you know, a lot of calling in and changing credential or changing profile information. Think about, you know, one thing we've been hearing as well is, you know, a lot of retirement accounts, and people obviously are probably reassessing and changing some things around, or unfortunately maybe cashing some out. understanding that you're dispersing funds to the correct account. If someone's calling it to change an email address, change a phone number, change contact information, re-identification of every touch point, every validation, every authentication of anything they're changing is more important now than ever, because, you know, again, traffic's up, maybe record call volumes are up, and the fraud operators are going to exploit this. So, you know, the customers that are using us, or, you know, that may have had two or three parts of the platform, are now calling and saying, okay, we want more of this and more of that, because we're having to, you know, service a lot more people online and over the phone. Having that holistic approach, being able to walk that customer life cycle and manage it, again, keeps false declines down, keeps the fraud out, protects the good customers, and allows companies, you know, to be able to manage their loss line in a time where, you know, you can't maybe send someone out in the field or send someone to a branch or a physical location to verify a piece of information or an identity.
Yes, and I would reiterate for businesses, for merchants, you know, across different verticals, to do a top to bottom review and survey of your fraud metrics. And you'll know from past business experience how your fraud numbers should look. And again, expecting a spike in under current conditions, and working with fraud management partner, they will be able to find things that you may not be aware of. So you have to have another set of eyes come in and find things that you may not have noticed, but a fraud management solutions company will see from another business, another vertical that's happening, or be in the forefront of a trend that's going on fraud management. So as always, you need some help in this, and you have to really look within your system and get everybody on board to be very vigilant, because right now it's a very vulnerable situation.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Ray and David, for taking the time today for speaking to me about fraud and kind of this new normal that we seem to be living in. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thanks, Ryan. Anytime.
Thank you.